Welcome back. Today on the episode, I bring you two conversations with two of my favorite individuals. First, I catch up with Willie Wilcox. At the time of our recording, he was in Hawaii about to caddy for Sung JM in the Century Tournament of Champions. Since I had Willie on the first time, he has had his highs and he's had his lows in his career, but he has now found himself on the bag for Sung JM, one of the brightest stars, future stars, current stars in the game of golf. I feel like it is inspiring to see how Willie has navigated his life to get to where he is today. I got a lot of love for Willie, and he opens up about some of his struggles in the episode, but it's just incredible to see where he is today. And then my second conversation is with Roger Saleh. Roger is a Ugandan-born golf enthusiast. Since his early days, he has been trying to figure out a way to grow the game of golf in Uganda. And we got to catch up and learn about his mission. And he is dedicated to that growth of the game of golf in Uganda. It was enlightening to listen to him and talk with him about the current state of what he is trying to do. And I had a lot of fun learning about his childhood and how he grew up. And of course, his mission that he is on now. Another mission of one of my sponsors, Rebel Rabbit. They are on a mission to socialize smarter and healthier. For a long time, people have been thinking they have to drink alcohol when they go out and socialize or they get home from work. And Rebel Rabbit seltzers are on a mission to change that. They are Delta 9 infused, so cannabis infused seltzers where you can kick back and relax and have one. You'll sleep great. You'll wake up without a hangover. You're going to be able to be productive in the days following. It doesn't matter if you're out with friends, socializing, kicking back and relaxing at the house. A Rebel Rabbit could be a perfect alternative and perfect permanent drink for you instead of alcohol. It has none of the negative and harmful side effects that alcohol does. So Rebel Rabbit has grown their retail base all over the country. So you can go to their website, drinkrebelrabbit.com, and you can find a retailer closest to you. Or you can go to that website, drinkrebelrabbit.com, use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. They have incredible customer service, and they'll ship it directly to your doorstep. And if you go to the link in the show notes, that promo code will already be listed in there. And then the mission of Spinx. Spinx, for a lot of the people where I grew up, they see a convenience store, they think it's just a normal gas station, but Spinx has never been a normal gas station in the way of what they do for their communities. They have incredible gas stations, they have great car washes, they have great food, they have all that sort of stuff now in these new age gas stations, convenience stores. But what makes them different is what they do for their communities. They invest millions and millions and millions of dollars back into the communities that they're in. They give it to incredible organizations like the March of Dimes and many, many others. So all I ask is if you go to their link in the show notes, find the location nearest to you and just support your local Spinx, because I guarantee you they are supporting the communities they are in. So if you have a Spinx on your street corner, if you know it when you're passing by to go to work, stop in, support your local Spinx, because I can guarantee you, like I said, they are supporting that community they are in. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Willie Wilcox and Roger Saleh. They're incredible conversations. I hope you enjoy. If you haven't given the podcast a 5-star rating, take a few seconds to do that. It'll help others find the show. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Willie Wilcox and Roger Saleh. Willie Wilcox, what's up, dude? First off, you're in Hawaii.
Yeah. It's pretty epic. Never been here to this island.
A lot has changed since I first had you on a couple years back. We were just trying to figure out when that was. But, dude, I mean, you've had, I guess I would say, some probably downs, but some incredible ups in your life in the last, 6-7 months, really. But talk me through. So a couple, say 8 months ago, what were you doing?
So that would have been in, I was caddying at the Ocean Course. So, yeah. Got there April 11th in Lonto. I worked for Lonto on the West Coast. And then he wanted to make a change. I mean, he was going through some swing stuff. And, oh, that's right. He got injured. He got injured at a Riviera. So he was nice enough to let me caddy from like basically New Year's of last year till Riviera. So I got like basically the West Coast, and then he let me go because he had an injury. And then I went to Kiowa. I didn't really have anything to do. My house rent, whatever, lease ran out in Alabama. I needed to get out of there, and then moved to Kiowa Island and started working, you know, carrying two bags, 18 or 36 holes a day until the US Open.
What led you to Kiowa? And first off, I'm in South Carolina. That's where I live, man. So welcome to the state. I know you got a house now in Charleston, but what was the reason you picked South Carolina? I mean, the ocean course is incredible, so that's a great place to be, but what led you to South Carolina?
Well, my old caddy, Ryan, he has worked at the ocean course for 25 years. So it's a good caddy program, and I didn't really have anything else to do. I thought for a while I was going to transition away from working in the golf world, but that didn't work. I tried to learn a business in Atlanta with my friend, and I just think at my age, that's just not going to happen. But yeah, Kiowa, I know, and I don't need much money in my life, so not to hate on what those guys do at all. Normally, it's a really good side hustle. You can make $250 to $400 a day, and you carry two bags. It's good exercise. I needed to whip my ass in shape. It's a really good way. You can't show up hungover one, but you certainly can't do anything heavier than, you know, drinking or smoking, which was good. It was a lot of accountability that I needed.
Yeah, dude, it's a hard job. I've had the pleasure of playing out there, and you know, I mean, it's a tough. It's a pretty flat walking course, but it's still tough carrying two bags.
Like dunes, and yeah, it can be definitely a good workout, which is exactly what I needed.
With your playing career, last we talked, you were I think about to either make your last run on the web.com or the Corn Ferry Tour. What led you to kind of stop playing?
The absolute humiliation that I experienced at the BMW, that was the worst week of my life. But when it comes to professionally, I'll never, ever forget that tournament. I went down a rabbit hole. I mean, I cried in competition that week.
Damn. I didn't know.
I mean, I couldn't handle the emotion of what was going on around me. One, my career was ending. Right before my eyes, I was working with a coach, and he was getting me to toss the angle, whereas I'm like a hang on to the angle guy, and I chunked top toe, shanked a driver out of bounds in front of 200 people. This ball went 40 feet. So, you know, Columbia Country Club or Columbia, what's the other one? Like the easy par four, number eight, I think it's like a hard dog day, right? It is the easiest hole on planet Earth. And the fairway is 200 yards wide. My ball went straight right, hit that house straight out of bounds. And I shot 76, 79, which was a fucking miracle in itself. And then the next day I said, my partner and I made the cut. And so I had to play Saturday. Mm-hmm. I shot 68. I had an eagle, a couple of birdies, still a few doubles. But that day I said, throw away all the shit he's been teaching me, because it ruined my career in life, you know, and I was going through a lot. My grandfather died on that Monday. I mean, it was a disaster that week. I was just in like, they should have put me in a straitjacket. Oh my God, 76, 79, and then 68 when I, whatever. And then I didn't touch a club till January after that. That's not true. I played the Colorado Open. And I withdrew after eight holes of the second round. I broke four clubs in the parking lot, two on the course, left all my clubs in a trash can there and left.
Was that the next week?
Probably 2 or 3 weeks later. I caught COVID the second the BMW ended. I got COVID at my grandfather's funeral. And anyway, tough week.
Dude, I saw you on the range that week, and you were telling me, I think like you were trying to get your clubs figured out. You were like, maybe the angle was wrong or the loft was wrong.
I won the tournament in San Diego to get the exemption into the BMW. I won that. I shot, I won by, I was like 10 under in 27 holes. I played great. And then the little angle thing I was working on, I got carried away with. I would never mention the coach's name or ever say anything negative about him. I love him to death. I was just in recovery or, you know, whatever. I was in that phase where I was trying to not do what I was wanting other people to tell me what to do, because obviously what I told myself didn't work.
Yep.
Which is not the case in golf. I know way more about golf than anybody, or at least anybody trying to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, won the event in San Diego. Then the next day I had like 8 balls in my bag. We played a skins game. I lost them all on the front nine, every single ball. And I was just kind of like, well, I won $5,000 yesterday in exemption, and in an exemption, you know, obviously my game's still in there. It happened 16 hours ago. And for whatever reason, I've never played so bad. So I had 4 weeks to prepare for the BMW, and I've never played so bad in my life. I lost every ball in my bag on the front nine, every round that I played.
All right, fast forward. You say, screw it. You walk off the course after 8 holes. You break clubs. Is that when you try and go to Atlanta? Or are you like, maybe I can go find a caddying gig? Like, what was your life moving through right then?
Atlanta, yeah. We started the company in Atlanta July 17th, which was literally when I landed from Denver. So I missed the cut, went on a booze bender, and then flew back. And then I went to Atlanta. I learned water mitigation as much as I possibly could. You know, we got a van, tons of fans, and a shitload of equipment. And the business is still going. My buddy runs it. It's going well. But so I tried to learn that business over the next 4 or 5 months. Then I got in that horrific car accident.
Mm-hmm.
But that was after I finished second with Ben at the U.S. Amateur.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was fucking incredible.
That's when I first saw you caddy, and I was like, damn, look at Willie out there. And y'all were like in the final round. I mean, that shit was intense on the last day.
Yeah, 316 cut down to 2. So it was pretty cool.
How did you get that gig with Ben?
I've known Ben since he was 18.
And that's Ben Carr, right?
I lived in Columbus, Georgia when I was engaged. And so then the pandemic hit. So Ben came home from school. My Corn Ferry Tour, you know, attempt at the time was put on hold. So, yeah, we had like 4 months to play or 3 months to play golf. We played like every day. And Ben's my buddy, you know, a great player. And I was just going up to a concert in New York City. And he was going to be right there. So he was in Northern Jersey.
Is that after that tournament?
He just called me.
Yeah, after that tournament, was that when you were like, all right, I might try and do this more. It might be a different career path. I could take to Kiowa, and then we got to get into Sung JM, which is incredible. But talk to me through your mindset about like, hey, maybe I can start caddying.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely I've always looked at myself as a caddy, and I'm more of like a, I don't know, in my opinion, kind of a follower, not a leader. I'd rather just be told where to be and all that. So I knew caddying was something I always wanted to do. And then when we had that run, it was just beyond epic and great timing. So Ben was then in the Masters and the U.S. Open, and then so I thought, okay, I'm going to get the Masters and the U.S. Open next year. So, but that wasn't enough motivation for me to keep my shit together. I did go to rehab in December of 2022 again. And so but I've been really, really good since then. But other than that little stint after my car accident.
Yeah, my new car accident.
Yeah, that was just horrific. I flew back from the AM, and then I'm in Alabama. I'm gathering up all my things. And I mean, my hands are deformed. I mean, they work fine. They work great, but I can still play golf. That's all that matters. But I did basically like lose a knuckle. If that's the worst that happened, that's a huge victory. So I was going from Birmingham to Atlanta. It's right into the sun at 6:30 in the morning. And I was in a car that wasn't mine, because I just, mine was in the shop or something. And I was going like 55 and we hit a big old traffic jam. There was four fatalities in it. There was a big truck that caught on fire underneath the bridge. So I was the last car in this huge pileup, and I hit the back of a car that was stopped going 55.
Damn.
Yeah, really, really scary. But that happened to a lot of people because it's not normal that the interstate goes from 70 to zero in like a 100-foot area.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you, I'm sure you've seen that before. It's super scary.
Yeah,
and if you look away for a split second, you were on that car already.
Yeah.
And it was right into the sun, 6:30 in the morning. And basically both my hands at 10 and 2 went through the front windshield, and but the airbag and the seatbelt grabbed me, so it was just my hands, which was fine, you know. And then I, luckily that Nissan Rogue that I was driving, like, can't say enough about those cars. I climbed to the back, got out the back door, and my hands looked like hamburger. It was rough, and but the adrenaline's still kicking, so you don't really know what's going on. And but so I rode away. The ambulance took me up to the next exit because I wasn't trying to pay for that. But then my mom grabbed me, and basically I was in so much, such excruciating pain for the next month because I didn't have any insurance. I called everybody trying to see if anybody, I wanted everybody to take my insurance that was very shitty. I did have insurance. But I mean, it was getting $8,000 out of, I don't know what it was. So I was just like, I'm just gonna see what happens to my hands, mm-hmm. Which in fine. But I did, you know, when you're in that much pain, I'd never been in that much pain really, period. And I was 7 months clean, you know, like, it was a pretty bad time for that to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
As you can imagine. So, but I only had about an 8 week, like, slip. And I was able to basically, you know, pull myself out of it.
But, yeah. Did it start from like pain pills or something you get from your hands?
Well, that was the thing. In the doctor's office, when I initially got checked out, they were like, you want this, you want that. And I was up front with them. I was like, if I can fight this out and just, you know, deal with it, you know, I'm going to go that route. And then I laid in bed the next, like, probably week or so, a couple days. And I'm just like, I don't have anything to do. I'm in freaking pain. I can't do my work in Atlanta now. I certainly can't play golf.
Yeah. Can't caddy. Yeah, nothing.
Caddy, can't do anything. I can't even, like, grab a towel off the rack. Like, it sucked. And so, yeah, I just freaking went off the cliff again. But not too bad. It wasn't like it was before because I was running out of money. Mm-hmm. I also broke. I spent my last $7,000 on rehab, so I'm going to get some more coffee.
Hey, props for spending it on rehab, dude.
Yeah, that could have, it was a decision where I was like, I mean, I'm not going to live through this shit if I don't get some help, so.
With that, with the relationship with Ben at that point, did y'all had talks about potentially doing the Open and the Masters and stuff? And did this, like, hurt that opportunity?
All the issues I was having?
Yes.
Oh, nobody knows about that stuff. I mean, I've told people that I went and got treatment, but at the time, you know, I'm a professional at, well, shit, you know, when you're going through something like that, it's not like you're going out to have dinner with your friends.
Yeah.
And you're not making phone calls to check up on people.
Yep. And you're definitely not, like, probably reaching out to tell people.
Oh, I was face down on my fucking bathroom floor, passed out.
So you get out of that, which is freaking awesome. You find your way out of it. You go to treatment. What do you think when you get out of treatment and you might be little money to your name, you know, don't really know your career path? Is that when you take the decision to go to Kiowa, or what was the transition?
I ended up, you know, I got some loops, and I was a good chunk clean at that point. It was like, you know, maybe 40 days. But I went and caddied. I started caddying on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's incredible. How did that come about? Like, I mean, obviously, you know so many people in the golfing industry. Did you reach out for the possibility to do that, or did it just like happen?
I mean, I was doing my podcast, and I just basically jokingly said, Gavanto's coming off a injury. So I was like, I was like, man, you think I'd come out there and try it? He just was in a position where he needed a change, and he said, yeah.
Hell yeah. And then he gets injured, right?
Yeah, he broke his rib at Genesis, because he's a hard worker. He, like, no pain, no gain type guy. And so he had one of those fascia balls, you know, the harder ball you lay on to break up the muscles and stuff. And he laid on it so hard, and he was working on some move, and it cracked his rib, and then he still tried to play through it. Really painful. And so he bailed after 9 holes of the second round. And then at that point, I really am out of options. So I worked in Atlanta some, yada, yada. And then April 11th, I finally was able to get the heck out of Bama and Atlanta and go to Kiowa. And that was the greatest stretch ever. April 11th through June 7th, probably did like 70 loops. And, you know, it's like a boot camp, mental and physical boot camp, because you're really having to lower, I don't want to say lower yourself. I mean, shit, I was on the PGA Tour. Now I'm carrying 2 bags for people that are shooting 200. You know, I'm not saying to a caddy's level. I'm just saying you got to slow your shit down, you know, and be like, this is the new life.
Yeah.
You know,
and dude, props for you for doing that. And fast forward a couple of months, you're back on the PGA Tour with like an incredible golfer. But I want to learn about y'all's relationship. And I think it stems from some of y'all's early, or maybe his early days on the web.com tour. But how did you form the relationship with Sungjae early on in his career that ended up paying off, you know, right now, currently? I mean, you're freaking tournament of champions.
Yeah. Well, I got paired with him in 2018 when he was 19. Maybe just turned 20, I don't know. But because he's only 25 now. So, yeah, when he was a kid, basically, he was fresh. I think he turned pro when he was like 15 or 16, which is wild, which is very, very rare for men's golf. But, I got paired with him. Basically, the last time that I played well was in 2018, and I really, really played good that year. I almost got my card. I should have gotten my card. Like the weekend, like this is the reason the BMW is so tough for me last year. I mean, I've never shot over even par on any of those golf courses. You know what I mean? Like I've shot 64s, 63s. You know, I finished in the top 20 many times in that tournament. And, you know, I'm a 60. So to shoot 76, 79 was pretty rough. But at the BMW that year, I was like 20th on the money list. Ended up finishing like 17th or something. But 2018 was a great year. I got paired with Sungjae. He saw me play well, and then when he saw me, and he knew I was on the tour before then as well, so I think he almost looked up to me at that point, which is wild to think about. Or I mean, he definitely gave me a lot of respect.
Definitely.
He knew I wasn't just some dude, and remembered that, I guess. And then at the US Open, he hired me basically right on the spot, because I think he just wants somebody who has experience playing and was a good golfer.
Did what was the first tournament you caddied for him?
That was Connecticut, the week after the US Open.
What's y'all's relationship on the course? Like pre-shot routine, is he asking you, you know, where you think you would hit it, or is he mainly asking you like wind direction and yardage? Like how much are you, you know, involved with him on like the shots before you get to the green?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. You gotta get all the heads, and definitely numbers. I mean, he's going to do the number as well. So basically I think deep down he knows what club to hit. He's a world-class athlete, but he really wants to, he's got so much going on in his head that he wants all the raw concrete information that's going to be the same. He wants that to be told to him so he can think about all the other stuff. And maybe he, you know, when it comes to the anxiety of the situation and how big the moment is, he wants to be able to stay in his, you know, trance and then just hear 145 meters to the front helping wind, you know, hit the 8-iron or something. So I do everything. I do, but he does it as well, but he's definitely letting me kind of guide the way as far as I can tell.
Have you thought about your demeanor, or like when it's time maybe to like give him some motivation, or just like if you see him maybe struggling a little bit to like hype him up a little bit? Have you thought through like how you might go do that with him on the course?
Yeah, I would say that's even bigger than doing the raw numbers and stuff. Because I mean, it's a lot of like body language, facial expressions, energy. You just don't want to be like, if you're around somebody nervous, like I noticed when I do things like this, or even when I'm in like normal conversation, I'm pretty fidgety.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't make a ton of eye contact. I know in the ropes, I'm super dialed in. Like, I'm not like a nervous person to be around. Whereas I can tell the way other people look at me when I interact with them, they're not that comfortable around me. Sungjae is though. He likes my, you know, whatever. I mean, I think he thinks I'm funny. And, but yeah, it's a lot of just small micro interactions, you know, little micro interactions to make him feel more comfortable and more confident. And I mean, you don't want to be like, well, there's times to be a cheerleader. There's times that you can be a cheerleader, but you certainly don't want to be like Mr. Yes Man, endlessly positive.
Yeah.
You know, got to be like, basically you just got to ride the wave with him. You gotta ride the athletic, you know, endeavor wave, and just be super focused. Like I try not to dick around on my phone. I mean, when he's hitting putts, when I'm out there with him for a 7-hour period, I mean, you know, that's not time to like chit chat or anything like that. And for the Americans I've caddied for, sometimes the focus is lacking because we speak the same language. But since he doesn't speak English, mm-hmm. you know, it's straight up golf, which I really, really like.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
With the caddy player relationship over time, and speak, I guess, on you and Sungjae. Was it like, all right, come back next week and then y'all do pretty well? And then, hey, how about you come back next week? Like, how does that interaction work till y'all just kind of keep working together?
I mean, it's just like they said, Connecticut and Detroit. So when they give you a 2-week tryout, which I mean, it could be a freaking 2-minute tryout if you do something stupid. So I mean, really, it's just I don't think it's week to week necessarily, but you could definitely be on the chopping block pretty fast, mm-hmm. Especially with these huge tournaments coming up. But also, I think he's comfortable with me. I don't know, it's week 10, so yeah, it's just, I mean, I knew I was coming to Maui, and that was all that mattered. I didn't know if, I was thinking he might play Sony, but he's not playing Sony. So yeah, it's, I'm going to show up until they tell me not to, basically.
Hell yeah. Being in Kapalua, do you know, is y'all's pairings out yet?
No, they're noon today. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
What's, did he just make a driver change swing a little bit?
No, it looked like he was maybe trying to hit it a little harder over in Korea than a couple of those videos, but he's hitting it the same. Okay. I mean, he might have gotten a little distance. I don't know. It's hard to tell with the altitude or the terrain and wind. But it looks like he's hitting it pretty damn far. We had a long drive contest yesterday, and he outdrove me. I know that.
Are you? Do you get out there and play with him at all?
No, I haven't had that opportunity. But I mean, they were saying that we were going to get to play Sunday, but since it's now a larger field, they didn't let the caddies play this year. But there's 56 caddies, 56 players. That's too many that's too much traffic on the course. So, but I was we were going to get to play the other day. He was too. But yesterday, just we were out there. We were basically alone on the back nine on 17T, and it's just that huge par four down the hill towards the ocean.
Yeah.
And we were due to clear the fairway, and I was just kind of like, what do you think about a long drive contest? And he thought it was kind of silly at first, but then he hit his drive, and I was just going to, you know, I wasn't going to ask again. But he just turned around and handed me the driver, and then I was about to walk over there with no glove, and he was like, oh, sorry. He took the glove off, handed it to me. I was just like, you don't have to give me the glove, man. But he smashed his. I kind of overturned mine. It was just like 4 yards left of his, but he had me by like 20.
With you mentally, man, and like, you know, trying to stay on the sobriety chain for the most part, what is that like working as a caddy? Do they drug test you? Do they have, like, is it similar to a player or no?
No, it's, but the structure that this job provides for me, and I don't do opiates, or actually I don't do any pharmaceuticals of any kind. All I do is, unless it's anxiety medicine, but as in whatever. So, I'll have a few beers. Last night I had two when I went and played Maui Nui and Maui Nui.
Yeah, I saw you out there playing.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm the structure this job provides me, and also all my drug dealers are dead. I don't know where they're. When I was in home last week, everybody's like, "Oh, are you worried about being in Alabama?" I'm like, "I would be, but they're all dead." I know that's morbid, hey, but it's true. I don't know anybody from my hometown that I used to buy drugs from that is alive or is not in prison. I mean, it's honestly, what a good break for me.
I was about to say, dude, that's a sign.
They were really, really bad people. Don't be sad that they're dead. These were criminal, awful people. But I was just people that I grew up with. I mean, literally people that spent the night at my house when I was a child.
Probably wanted to keep taking your money too when you're making all that money.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. There was, I mean, they it was just an angle to steal from me and try to get me to go down the road that they're going down. But anyways, I digress. I do like to have a couple beers and maybe a little puff every now and again, but I don't do any of the things that are going to kill me. I don't do any of the things that ruin my life or other people's lives. You know what I mean? I mean, with this fentanyl epidemic, like, there ain't nothing to do. I mean, it's not OxyContin. It's not anything that you could do and go to like the skating rink or something. You know, I mean, this is some scary, scary shit that's going on now. And I feel awful for parents and kids that are experimenting. Because when I was coming up and when you were coming up, you could experiment and you weren't going to die.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you know, I don't encourage experimenting in this day and age. But when I was growing up, everybody said to me, try everything once, we'll screw it. You know, that's what everybody told me, yeah. Which is.
There's so many stories of kids dying, like taking their first pill, their first thing ever, and it was laced with fentanyl. They had no idea, you know, it wasn't what they were supposed to be taking, and they wind up dead.
TikTok, too. Like, these kids are getting drugs on TikTok and Snapchat, and, like, imagine being a 13-year-old kid, and somebody random hits you up on Snapchat. I know if I was 13, I'd be like, hey, how are you? You know, I wouldn't know any better.
Definitely.
And then you can buy fentanyl for $1. I mean, you can get it for $1 and $1 of death. And so, anyways, yeah, I feel so confident going forward because, I mean, shit, like, there's nothing groovy anymore. I'm not saying if anything groovy came out, I would start doing that. But I've filled up my tank of overindulging when it comes to that type of stuff.
That's how I just feel, too.
I'm too old.
Yeah, like, I've done, I don't need that anymore in my life. Like, I've experienced, I'm not happy doing it. Like, it really fucks up my life, so might as well
body, do it. And it basically turns your organs into concrete, you know? I mean, I'm tired. I think my colon and everything, it can't handle another run. I mean, maybe technically can, but, I mean, not with this fentanyl crap. That stuff turns you into a zombie. I mean, I got to where... One day, it was last year, 2 years ago, whatever, I forgot what side of the road to drive on. Literally, pulling out of the golf course, got in the left lane, started heading on out. You know, and I mean, I've lived in places where you could drive or you were supposed to drive on the left side. Yeah. So maybe like back in. But anyways, I pulled the car over to the left side of the fucking road on the like off to the side in the grass and waited on a car to drive by to learn again what side to drive on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, that's only because of the drugs, obviously. I mean, now my brain's pretty good, I like to think. But if you want your body, brain, personal relationships and everything to end, then have at it. Have a good old fentanyl run.
For real. Yeah, life end. You, dude, you're living in one of my favorite cities, Charleston.
Yeah.
Spending most of your off week still there?
No, I moved.
Damn, you did?
I did. I haven't told anybody this, especially in a public format, but one of the caddies from the Ocean Course broke into my house.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. He was drunk. He doesn't remember doing it, but I had the key to his house because I used to live there for a period. And I guess in his drunken stupor, he thought that maybe one day I would break in or something. Like, I don't know why he kicked my fucking door in, but it was at about 1 a.m. I was in bed and he came in the house to threaten me and get the key back. So I literally packed my shit and left. And I haven't been back. Because somebody like that's capable of that behavior shouldn't know where I live. Mm-hmm. That's very, very scary. Because he was threatening me. He said he was going to kill me. So I left. Unfortunately, when you live in a public way the way I do, shit like that's going to happen. If
you know where you live.
They know where you live. I mean, I would never let anybody know where I live at my next crib. No fucking chance. But unfortunately, in Charleston, a lot of people knew where I lived. And there's 120 caddies. I'm not shitting on caddies, but that one caddy in particular is a very dangerous person, and I left. I'm sorry, that's too much information, but...
Hey, man, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All good. No, I'm moving back to Florida, where I belong, and I have a place in Jacksonville. It'll be awesome. You know, I can't caddy at the Ocean Course anymore anyways. I can't be, like, a reliable member of that caddy yard, so... I'm going to find another place to live. But Charleston was super epic from April 11th through, when did I leave? Probably December 5th or so.
I'm long ago. Yeah, because I guess I listened to when you did with Dan, the mine and mine or whatnot episode or the video.
Yeah.
Dude just bought a house here.
No, I didn't purchase. I just said I rented.
Oh, got it.
But house on James Island. It was fantastic. Luckily, the people were super nice to me and they were able to, they let me get out of the lease. So I was just in that house for 60 days. But, and I feel, you know, that sucks. I love Charleston. It's hard to travel out of.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. Smaller airport.
You might as well live in Miami or something like that. Or let's see, another obscure location that kicks ass. Like the West Banks or some shit. You know what I mean? You need to live somewhere that's really epic when you get there. And it is, but not when people are kicking my doors in.
With Sung JM going forward, has he told you, hey, you're good for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks? Or, I mean, dude, he's going to be in the biggest tournaments all year long.
Yeah. His next, he goes, obviously this one, Amex. Well, no, and then he plays all of them. Yeah, so he's playing 6-7, and so yeah, I mean, if all goes well, I'll do this one and next week off in LA, and then 5 in a row. So that would just be unbelievable. I hope I get the chance.
Yeah, man, how's your mom doing?
Good. Yeah, she's like a year away from retirement, and yeah, she's great. She's UAB 25-year employee. Nice. So.
She's, I mean, you talked earlier, the very beginning of this episode, you know almost as much golf as anybody, and she's one of the main reasons for that.
Yeah.
Is the thought in your brain to eventually ever play again, or is that book closed?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'll get an exemption. I mean, who knows? Like, the opportunity on tour is just too damn good now to not caddy, and also, like, I like the structure of caddying. You would think that maybe as a player you'd have more structure, but that wasn't in my case because you're your own boss, you know?
You can do whatever you want, yeah.
you know, whatever you want. And like, I mean, I would be at tournaments and just walk away. I would just go to the parking lot, hop in my rental, and go to the airport. Like, if I didn't want to be there anymore, I would literally just leave on Tuesday afternoon, Thursday morning before my tee time, after the back nine on Friday, if I wanted to fly to another place and go hang out with, you know, something. Like, yeah, anyways, if I'm my own boss, it's trouble. So I'll never play professionally, like, as a job again. But, I mean, I play so much golf and my game's in good shape. So, but I can't really handle the nerves. I realized that a lot of the time, the reason I did all that, you know, it wasn't because I was a crazy party boy or some selfish asshole. It's because I was self-medicating because I can't handle the nerves. Mm-hmm. Like, solid as a rock standing in front of 10,000 people. Like, few are, I think.
Especially trying to make like a 3-foot putt.
Yeah, or just not shank one. Or like, I mean, I get to where my equilibrium's off, the ground's moving like this, my balance is off. I can't, you know, I can't, once I get past that first tee, I'm fine. But I mean, I'm glad there wasn't. Sure, there was actually. When I teed off the BMW last year in my last Corn Ferry event, I'm sure there was a camera on me, but the emotion, the nerves were so intense. It was like whoa, whoa, whoa in my head. And I had to close my eyes. I had to back away from the ball. And I was going like this. So it was just like shaking my head. I was just like, I was about to pass out. And like, sick. Let's hit this fucking tee shot now. Like, you know what I mean? Like one, my game wasn't that ready anyways. I mean, I'd been practicing my ass off for 6 months, but I was still playing terrible. I mean, I just realized at that time, without all those opiates and Xanax in my system, that is a lot harder to do.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I get nervous on the first tee, and I got three people watching me, just my group, you know? And sometimes I feel like I just swing with my eyes closed, and hopefully I make contact, and it goes far and relatively straight.
Yeah, it just, when it comes to a person like me, I've been competing for 31 years, so there's another aspect of being frustrated with it, because obviously I'm as ready as anybody to hit a shot in front of people. You know, I mean, my game's super, super dialed in. But so when you're that ready to go, and then you hit a really, really bad shot because of nerves, that makes it that's a lot harder to handle, like, as an athlete. So I don't want to be prepared, get overrun by nerves, and then fuck up. Like, that sucks. Like, I'd rather be prepared and be able to just roll with it. But every time Sungjae tees off in a big moment or has a big putt, all I can think is, thank God I'm not hitting this thing.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best, and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep, and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
What's the greatest round you've ever played?
The 59 on the Corn Ferry Tour was pretty damn sick, from 2013. Yeah, that was
what course
was
that at?
Willow Creek in Salt Lake City.
With another 59, you've talked about, got robbed after a 59 one time.
Yeah, that was the whole weird deal. I had this ridiculous sponsor guy who's basically like a country dude that just got really rich after the tornadoes. It was like disaster relief, logging, you know, tearing out all the trees that got ripped down in 2011. So I had this crazy redneck backer dude that, I mean, he was just like I don't know how he came into this money and how he, but I mean, he had like a $200,000 car, but he still played at like Roebuck in downtown Birmingham. And he did join Greystone. But anyway, so I would have never gone to this game. I don't know why he invited me to it, but I think it was like his regular bullshit game, and he wanted to bring in his new PGA Tour player and destroy everybody, you know, and win the game.
You did do that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, and I mean, I told him on the tee what the deal was, but it was a bunch of guys that I certainly never saw myself playing against, especially having just finished like 16th or 12th in Memphis on the PGA Tour, literally 3 days before that. That was fucking crazy. And then the same guy that invited me there, who got the guys all riled up and made them want to rob me, basically. He was like speaking for me. He was like talking shit to them for me. I was just in the background going, guys, let me get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. But this guy fucked up. You got to pay him. But I was like, no, they don't. I'm leaving. But that guy, about a month later, he paid $40,000 to join this nice course in Birmingham. He was in a $2,000 per hole bet. On the fifth hole, he was down 4 bets. He faked a heart attack, got picked up by an ambulance, and nobody has seen this guy since.
Dang.
Yeah, he moved. So that's who invited me to that game where I got robbed.
Sounds like an interesting character.
Ghosted everybody. Who knows where he's at? I'd call him a criminal character.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And he ripped me off. So.
Oh, yeah, with the patch.
I wore his logo on my sleeve for 12 months. And, I mean, he was, like mean about it. Like, my agent contacted him a few times, and he was just like, I'll fucking sue your ass, you know? he's just a redhead. He doesn't know how things operate. And, I mean, he basically, like hates me now because I had my people ask them for money. Even though he's the one that brought the deal to me. It was just like, all right, dude.
I tell my wife that all the time. Like, we see people around and we're just like, there's people in this world. There's some weird, interesting criminal people in this world that just don't know how the world works. With Sungjae, what's y'all's pre-tournament practice look like? How much time does he want to be out on the course? How much is it range or on the course? Like, how does that structure look like for y'all?
Not a lot of range. I mean, he just, feeling his, and he hits it so good all the time. He doesn't need the range. A lot of chipping, a lot of putting. He's always working on making sure that his stroke is, the way he wants it. And sometimes he pulls his putter a little inside. But yeah, just a lot of specific yardages, just basically starting the process, starting the routine. Because it's such a routine. I mean, literally nothing changes when you're caddying for, an elite player like that. It's like, bags on the putting green at starting time, and, I mark all his pins, and, we got all the golf balls dialed in. There's no extra trash in the bag. There's no old waters in the bag. The bag is perfect, ready to go, and then I set up this putting drill with the mirror and the tees, and then he'll eventually pop out and start hitting putts. And the practice rounds are pretty laid back, but it's more like one out of every 8 shots, it's like, all right, let's do this one for real or whatever. I mean, he hits great shots whether he focuses or not, but it's all business. And oh, his coach Josh Gregory's out there. He worked with Josh for probably about an hour and a half yesterday. So, just regimented, doing the, lag putts, short putts, go around the hole, right to left, right, downhill, uphill. So today we'll get there at 10:30. I bet it'll be a pretty relaxed day for him.
Is the tournament more relaxed than others?
I would say so. There are certain guys. I saw Eric Van Ruyen, and he was having a beer with his father-in-law, and I said something like what do you think of the course, or like, how about this wind that's gonna blow, and he was like, I don't where normally he would be like, he's like, dude, I'm on vacation with my family. Like, it's still a big week. It's huge points, so it means a lot. But I would say that if it was PGA Championship week, I doubt he would have said that,
Totally. It's like an honor to be there this week.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like the Tour Championship. I feel like the Tour Championship and this one, well, especially the Tour Championship, if you don't have a chance to win it, those guys are pretty, they'll phone it in more than they'll ever phone it in any other tournament. They won't phone it in. If it's the final round on Sunday at the Tour Championship and you're in 24th place, nobody gives a fuck at that point.
With Sungjae's team, does he have like a pretty big team, agent, managers, coach? Like, how is that?
Yeah, he does. He's got his American coach, Josh Gregory. I know he's got a guy in Korea that helps him, but it can't be much. I think maybe he just thinks about simple things and the chipping and, you know, hitting out of the different types of grass. He's got an English-speaking agent, a Korean-speaking one that's, you know, bilingual or probably, like, trilingual. Those guys are sharp. He's got three agents. And mom, dad, wife, they travel together for the most part. The family unit in the Korean culture is a lot more important, I would say, than the American. Because, I mean, when I was 23... I told my dad to kick rocks. I was just like, you don't get any more input on my. So they don't do that.
Yeah, totally. I think that's the way with a lot of other cultures outside the U.S. sometimes with family. I was just down in Mexico City and we were flying back and it was around Christmas time. And there were like 150 people at the airport waiting on their grandparents to arrive.
Yeah. Not in America, boy. I'm telling you, Korean women, Japanese women, ride or die, ride or die.
Oh, dang.
American woman, not ride or die. Maybe you have an angel. I don't know. But I haven't met her yet. I have not met that sweet little angel that want to take care of me. Fuck
really?
No.
They might be coming for you, man.
I know my days doing women are fucking over. I'm going to wait for them to come.
There you go. Hey, if this year goes to plan, and I was texting you beforehand, like, I think your personality is perfect for a caddy. Like you said too, like, you know so much about golf. You know when the right times to step in. Like, you of course know all the golf stuff you need to know. But say it goes to plan, what would be your tournament you're most looking forward to caddy in?
I gotta say the Masters. Yeah, Masters. I played a U.S. Open, caddy the U.S. Open, never played a PGA, but I definitely think the Masters is, that week's just got a different vibe. I mean, you live right down the road, huh?
That's right.
I've been the last 2 years, and I just remember being out there thinking, man, I certainly would like to caddy in this thing. Yeah. I mean, playing in it, that ship has sailed, but I'm super stoked about that opportunity, and I'm going to do my best. I mean, you know, it's all about weathering the storm out here, and I'm sure it's that way in every business and lifestyle. So I'm going to do my damnedest. I'm about to go, when we hang up in a sec, I'm going to go up to the course. A lot of the heads don't have anything on them. I mean, the people will write in Sharpie, but it's a different week because the heads don't have anything on them. We play meters. So when people write 211 front, that's not necessarily in the book. I've got to do a lot of math in those moments to make sure I have the right head. And there's a shitload of heads and they're all blind. Mm-hmm. So they're probably 4 or 5 wide because the fairways are huge. And anyways, it's going to be a tough week for meters guys. And by that, I mean me. Mm-hmm. I can do the conversion really fast. It's just 10%. But I'm noticing that a lot of those on the fly, everything goes really, really fast in competition. It may look slow on TV, and it is slow. But when what we're doing, it's just like, oh, shit. You know, especially like if something happens that you're not expecting or ruling or, you know, even with one shot doesn't go to plan. I mean, you better be ready, you know, and you better spit that information out correctly. So I digress. I need to go up there and look at these heads. Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of them, but still, it's very important that I don't fuck up the yardages.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm guessing some people know, especially if you're golf fans, but the pre-work caddies have to go through on week to week is a lot of work. Willie, I want to thank you for coming on, dude. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Got a lot of respect for you and how you've gone about your career through the ups and the downs. And I mean, in a lot of ways, this could be like the takeoff of like the next 20 years of your life on the PGA Tour.
I would certainly like that. I, you know, nothing's for sure in this game, and it just, man, it's what a cool opportunity and a good time to be doing it, though. I know that. I would say historically, it's got to be the best time to be caddying. I mean, shit, the caddies are making. I mean, you should see some of these caddies' houses. I mean, most caddies for the week, I'm like, where are you guys staying? They're like, the Ritz. Like, where do you think I would stay? That place is $1,000 a night. Like, yeah.
Do you have a caddy you look up to?
Yeah. I mean, lots of them. Julian Trudeau. I'm a big fan of Danny Saul. Shit, there's so many good ones. Let's see. Fluff. I love Fluff. Who's out here this week that I really look up to? There seems to be a lot of, there's a big young crop of new caddies coming in here. Like Joe LaCava's out here. I haven't had many interactions with him, but I mean, he's like the ceiling of the age right now. You don't really see any Fluffs walking around anymore. 6'2", in shape, 35-year-old dudes. And they're, you know, they are ready to roll. And so I think the caddy's shifting a little bit. And I just hope to not piss anybody off or anything like that. Yes.
Well, dude, best of luck this week. I'm excited to be following along. And if things go to plan, who knows? I might see you at the Masters this year.
Hell yeah. Are you going to go?
I'm going to try. I'm actually trying to get a press pass for the podcast, which would be sweet.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for having me, dude.
Thank you. And now, here's my interview with Roger Salla. Roger, good evening. Thank you for, you said you're not staying up too late, but you're in Uganda, so thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me in the channel and the podcast. My name is Roger. So my full name is Kauchi Roger Sully from Uganda, Kampala.
What town are you in right now?
I'm in a town called Wakiso. It's called Wakiso District. It's between Kampala and Entebbe, where Entebbe Airport is.
And Uganda is in East Africa. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I was born in Uganda and I grew up in Uganda. I studied from Uganda.
What was life like for you growing up, and did you play sports?
Okay, life when I was growing up, I played different sports like soccer, like basketball, like volleyball, like swimming, but just average, not that serious.
What, did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I do have like two brothers and two sisters at home. So I don't live with them right now because where I live is near my job, the golf course. And where they live is where my mom lives in the village. So it's a bit far, like 2 hours drive.
I was reading that you picked up golf later in life when you were looking for, I think, a caddy job. What led you to looking to be a caddy and then, you know, kind of falling in love with the game?
I was looking for a job, like any job. So a friend of mine comes to me and says, hey, can you try out this to be a caddy? And then I went on to be a caddy, and then you need to be a good caddy, you also need to play very well to have clients you work for.
What were the first few rounds like when you were trying to figure out how to be a caddy? It's not an easy job.
It's actually not easy out because some golf players are actually frustrating in their playing. They have been a bad round. They put it on you. So, and you're also beginning. So you think you're the one making them to play badly. And yet it's them. So actually challenging.
Yeah, without a doubt. Golf is a challenging game in itself. With the community you're in, what's golf like? Is golf available to, you know, young kids? Like, how is that?
Okay, where I live, golf is actually not so available. It's not because people cannot play it, but some think it's a game of rich people, and some think it's wasting time. So it's that is the job of the golf union to build that, to show people that, hey, you can play golf, it's not very expensive. The only challenge is the golf clubs and the balls, maybe. But other than that, the golf courses are pretty cheap to play at.
The course you work at is beautiful. What is the name of that course?
Okay, the course I work at is a bit very expensive because it's like high for high-end, high-end clients. It's called Lake Victoria Serena, of course. But there are very many others which are cheaper, very cheap actually. Because here, a round of golf is about $55. But the rest, you can even play at $3, $4 maximum.
Dang. Have you seen, when you started caddying, did you start playing right away?
Okay, when I started caddying, I didn't start playing right away because I was looking for money. I was looking to have a home of myself, like a small house to rent. So even I was not having any interest with golf. Not until 2020, like during COVID time, because we didn't have much things to do, so we could only play golf.
Did, I mean, your swing's pretty incredible. Like, you got this pure, easygoing swing. How did you find your coach?
Yeah, so Nick, as I was playing, I was trying to figure out my swing. And then I had a friend of mine swinging. She shared a certain video of a kid who was swinging a golf, like a stick as a golf club. So I was inspired. And then I shared that video with on my Instagram. Then a guy called Jack Hart liked the video and was able to do a fundraising for the kids to buy golf clubs and other things like balls. So I think Nick got to know about me through Jack Hart's Instagram page. And then we became friends and then started helping me with my game.
What is your best score right now?
My best score? My best score is 69. I shoot 69 sometime. But right now I've not been playing a lot because of work.
Is this like a high season on the golf course for caddying? Is there a lot of tourists and people coming in to play?
Yeah, there's a lot of Americans, people coming from different countries like France and all over the world. Yeah, because Uganda has a lot of tourism, so people like to come, play golf, and then go to do gorilla tracking and other things like that.
With your career path in golf, you know, it sounds like you really want to try and grow golf in the communities where you were raised and born. What are some of the things you have planned to help grow the game of golf in Uganda?
I believe what helps to grow the game is having more tournaments, like a series, like something like a PGA Tour, but for mostly amateurs. If people have time to play tournaments, then it can grow easily.
What about the youth, like the kids? Have you seen them being able to pick up the game at all?
Yeah, yeah. When you go to these, like these courses I told you about, the ones which are very cheap to play at, kids are always there playing because it's for them, it's free to play. They just need balls and golf clubs. So what I do is sometimes when I have someone who sends me some clubs, I go to those golf courses and give out some golf balls, some golf clubs, whatever I can manage. Then I also go to schools. But to schools, I basically give those kids basics because no one knows about a golf club, golf ball. So it's like introducing them to the game.
Have you given them lessons before?
Yeah, I actually give a lot to my friends and to some. There's a certain kid I live with. I got to know about him. He was playing a tournament and then I loved his golf game. I decided to stay with him, not my brother or anything, but I tried to help where I can.
Do you want to play professionally one day? Do you want to be a teacher? Where do you see yourself in the game of golf?
I believe at some point I will have to be a professional because I am doing a course to be a PGA. PGA of America, they gave me a scholarship to be a certified pro of PGA of America. So it's like a must. I have to be a pro. But now it's very competitive, like the top guys.
Who are some pros that have come from Uganda?
Most Ugandan pros have not been able to reach to the top, like the DP World Tour level, like European Tour. But we have some who play in South Africa. One called Ronald, and then some other guys. You know, I've not spent a lot of time in golf, so I don't really know many about such history of golf in Uganda. But most of them are not playing like outside of Uganda because they don't have coaches, equipments like to help them, and they also don't have like a local tour, so it's hard for them to keep their form.
With golfers you've watched on TV and probably YouTube and social media, who are some of your favorite golfers to watch?
Mm-hmm. So there's first of all Scottie Scheffler, Max Homa, Tiger Woods, of course, Min Woolley. And there's also some guys here called, they're not professional, but they play well. Grant Overt, the GM Golf. Those guys, they inspire.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watch a lot of them, especially on YouTube. They're great. I watch them almost every day. With growing up, you said you played football or soccer a good bit?
Yeah. Soccer, swimming, basketball.
When you were growing up, what was your favorite sport?
Football, soccer.
Nice.
And the rest was there in Africa.
Very cool. With the community and like the golfing community you're in and the world, what kind of support have you seen from people?
People like PGA Tour, they support us with clubs. So many people are trying to help, but because of taxes and shipping costs, becomes very hard.
What was it like, I guess, before you had an Instagram, or how did people start to find out about your game and your swing?
I think people didn't, because when I start to play is when I start to do Instagram.
And was there one swing or one video that people kind of noticed, or did it kind of happen over time?
I think it's one video, like when I go to villages, people like to see those when I have kids, things like that. Such videos.
Yeah, that's what I like. I love when you're with the kids, like out in the fields, and you're just like practicing hitting golf balls and irons. And with your swing, how would you describe your swing?
I think it's not yet perfect. It's not perfect. I still lack some things and also need some playing to make it perfect.
What do you think, what's the part of your game you need to work on the most?
I mean, irons.
Dude, what's the strength of your game?
Strength is that I find the fairway always with the driver, but now irons, because when I reach an upper three, which is very long, I need to take a four iron. I have to get the bogey.
If things work out and, you know, continue to go as planned, do you see yourself kind of being a golf ambassador for Uganda? Like, eventually people will think of Uganda and golf, and they will also think of you, you know, helping bring golf to Uganda and your people. Is that kind of a goal of yours?
Yeah, I can see myself as an ambassador, because most times when someone wants me, once, like the recent post I made, is a certain boy wants to study in USA. He got a scholarship, but he wants to raise some money for the ticket and the air ticket and some school materials. So he reached out to me, said, "Hey, can we make something so that some of your followers can support me?" So we played 9 holes, then I edited all the shots, and then I put some captions. And I believe people are able to send him some messages and some support.
Very cool. I saw Riggs Barstool reached out and sent you some shoes.
Yeah. Riggs, I use him. There's someone sent me a game, PGA 2K23. So I saw that guy on the game. So I start to play with him. And then I find out he's the one who started the Barstool Sports. And there is a certain guy who came to teach American football. He works with Barstool. It's called Juan Tondon.
Yeah.
So he knows Riggs, because I believe he's their boss. So he told me, when I go back to USA, I can talk to him to give you some shoes. Yeah, then he sent, when he was coming back, came back with the shoes. They're nice.
Cool.
They're shoes.
What can people do to help support you?
Okay, mainly the support that I need is to go to villages, like the transport. Maybe I need to buy a vehicle or a van. That is the major challenge I have, because I spend a lot of money on transport. But then to go to teach the kids, that's easy, because I have very many clubs I can use, and balls are very cheap here.
With do you have a GoFundMe, or do you have a fundraiser to help that?
Yeah, I have a GoFundMe on my page. Yeah, I do.
Is there a better way to do it, or is that the best way?
I don't know if there's a better way, if you have any, but yeah, anyone, if anyone is there and you can help, can reach out to me, and then, because I am transparent and everything, I just do it as they want me to do it. But basically, that is the challenge I face a lot, is transport. That is why I don't go a lot to very far distances, because whenever I go, I can spend like $200 or $100 just for transport.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Is there a...
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a professional tournament?
I have ever been to a LPGA Tour tournament. I played pro-am in France.
Very cool.
Yeah.
If there was one tournament in the world you could go to, what would it be?
Ryder Cup. That one is Ryder Cup.
Ryder Cup's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, Roger, man, it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm excited to learn about, you know, what you're doing and learn about who you are. I think you got a lot of potential, and I think you're going to help bring the game to the communities that you're in. Thank you for waiting up for me, and it's pretty incredible. We can communicate when I'm in America. You're in Uganda. That's really cool. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. And have a great week and have a great day. I know it's still early there, so you should have a great week and have a great day.
You too. And I'll make sure to link everything when I put this out so people can find you, and hopefully it helps some of your support. And
all right.
Just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's a great mission. Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.